This episode of Fireside Chat is brought to you by TickTix. Buying tickets shouldn't be anonymous. We are built for fans, by fans. Available on Android and iOS. Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
This is Dan and Matt back with you for another episode of Fireside Chat. And Matt, I was a bit confused this week if I was watching Flames hockey or Oilers hockey out there. What a terrible week for this team.
Well, it's been a terrible season thus far. When you've only got 5 wins out of 16 games, there's no sugarcoating it. This team has been absolutely terrible.
Well, let's get into looking at the two terrible games for this week, and then we'll break down where this team's at and kind of give a state of the union, I guess. So we came into this week, we had 2 games, it was a fairly easy week. We were expecting the Flames to get a lot of practice in because they were at home. They took on the Dallas Stars first and ended up losing 4-2 here. Jamie Benn became the star of this game, scoring 2 goals. Why don't you start with your thoughts on this one?
Well, this game and even the Rangers game showed how mentally fragile the team was. And like, Calgary got up to an 8-1 shot lead in the first handful of minutes in the game. And then one minor mistake led to an odd man situation heading back the other way. And as has been familiar, a few seconds later the pucks end up in the Flames net. And then the wheels fell off for the remainder of the first period. And they allowed another one. And then in the second period, they fight back to tie. Then a careless penalty in the third period leads to another goal against, and that was the ball game right there.
It was just, to me, it was just poor discipline by the Flames. Like, if you look at just the way they played. I was excited at first because we saw 2 Goudreau goals within just a few minutes in the second. I thought it was Goudreau finally starting to turn it around. And I thought Kulak looked good in this game. I thought he looked like he actually belonged in the NHL in this game. But it was, I don't know, you're right. It was just the Flames, in my estimation, the Flames played better for more than half the game, but the Stars were just better at taking advantage of their opportunities.
And when you have a goalie like Kari Lehtinen, who is fairly terrible as an NHL goaltender, in net, like, you should be able to score more than 2 goals on that player. And the Flames, like, Gaudreau was finally generating offense, but there was nobody else that was doing anything, and that's the reason why the Flames lost.
Yeah, this game, I think more than a lot of games, we saw a lot of guys freelancing. I didn't get the feeling that we really had a whole team out there. It seemed like a lot of guys kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah, completely uncoordinated, it seems.
So I think the Flames got what they deserved in this game in the end. And as an interesting note, after this game, the Flames had the exact same record after 15 games after the Stars game this year that they had after the Stars game last year. And if you remember how we all felt last year, I'm feeling after this Stars game worse about the team this year than I was last year, and I'm not really sure why.
Well, last year, the problem was easily identifiable in that all 3 of the Flames' goaltenders were terrible. The problem is that both Elliott and Johnsson have actually been pretty good this season for the Flames. Like, I'm not saying that they've been all-star caliber goaltenders, but they've been serviceable, and they usually stop the first shot. But when you're giving up so many chances, there's only so much that one guy can do. Like, if you had...
Yeah, and I honestly don't think this year has been a lot of the goalies' fault. I think, you know, the goalies are making the first stop, which they need to, and I think a lot of times it's the defensemen who aren't clearing that puck out of the way.
Yeah, and like, you see that the other teams, when the Flames are generating chances around the net, that they're using their sticks to clear the puck effectively, and it helps to negate some of those chances. And when you see the other teams passing the puck through the crease area or the home plate area, there's no knocking down of the puck by anybody on the Flames, and the other teams are just able to eviscerate the
I mean, that's the thing, though, is it's the breakdown by the forwards and the defense that's causing the goalie to be in that situation, where last year we had times when it wasn't the goalie left out to dry and they still couldn't save the puck.
Yeah. Like, I recall that Kari Ramo goal with, like, a couple minutes remaining against Winnipeg early last year, and, like, that lost us that game because it was just such a bad goal. And, like, we haven't really seen too many stinker goals this season from any of any of the Flames goaltenders. And
I mean, to be fair, Elliott took some time to get warmed up. But I think once he got going, we are seeing what looked like an NHL-caliber goalie.
Yeah, and a high-quality NHL goalie at that. And the rest of the lineup has just been absolutely terrible.
Moving on to what is probably the worst of the two games, the game that everybody knew was going to be tough, including the Flames players. I mean, the Flames website, the media, they all talked to the Flames. They knew the Rangers were coming in. The Rangers were going to be fast. The Rangers were going to be ready to go. And the Rangers ended up beating us 4-1. And in this game, I don't know what the official count is, but it seemed like the Flames were giving away way too many pucks in this game.
Well, it seemed like every mistake ended up in the Flames' net, or at the very minimum as a high-quality scoring chance, and you just can't make mistakes against a team like the Rangers and expect to win. And the Flames only had a couple of scoring chances in the first 40 minutes, and that, too, makes it difficult to win against a goaltender like Henrik Lundqvist.
11 giveaways by the Flames, I just checked.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, this is a top quality goalie, and for a team that is having issues with our top six, especially our top three score, a big goalie like that is going to cause some issues. I mean, you know, if we can't score on Edmonton, how are we supposed to score on Henrik?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. So I think I was pretty sure that the Rangers were going to manhandle us, and they did. And I think this game of all games this season really showed the weaknesses of this team.
And it's a all-through-the-lineup issue. It's not just, like, you can't just say single out, I guess, Michael Ferland as being, oh, this guy's doing a terrible job. It's every line has at least one player that's not performing, and each of the defense pairings is not performing.
And, I mean, we've talked in the past about some guys that looked really good. You know, we've talked about Stajan, we've talked about England, but, you know, we need everybody to be performing.
Or even the majority of the players performing. And, like, you might get the occasional good game like Gaudreau against Dallas, but then he disappeared entirely in the Rangers game, by and large. There's just no secondary depth at all with the Flames, and that's leading to a lot of problems, namely that we're having difficulty scoring and keeping the puck out of the net.
So, I mean, let's talk about this. This is now, I think, at the point where we're at, over 15 games into the season, this is getting a bit ridiculous. At first, we thought it was just a slow start, but I don't know about you. I think at this point, we're past the slow start.
At this rate, like, unless the Flames get a 7 or 8 game winning streak in the near future, I think the season's already finished.
But even a 7 or 8 game win streak now isn't going to save us. I mean,
no, that's just to hit the reset button, so that way, then from that point on, they have to play well.
Yeah, we have 11 points at this point. We're second last in the West with only Arizona below us. Colorado's 1 point above us. So, Matt, I mean, looking at this team, we both had different opinions going into this year. Before even seeing the roster this year, you were pretty sure that this was going to be a playoff team. You had the thought that the only thing broken last year was the goaltending. If we get rid of all three goalies, we've got to do better, right?
Well, and you look at most of the Flames roster last year, they were playing well. And the Flames did a good job at getting rid of some of the players that weren't doing well outside of the goaltenders. So between all of that, like, I wasn't expecting them to, like, win the division, but
we're expecting a solid effort.
Exactly.
It almost seems like a leaky ship, you know? It's like in those cartoons where you see them, you know, they put a cork in one side of the boat, and then they take a breath, and then the other side starts spurting a leak. It almost seems like that at this point. Like, we've put a cork in the goaltending problem, and now we've got scoring problems and defensive problems, and we just keep leaking at different places. So I guess the first question to ask then is it a coaching problem? Is this, I think that after the 15-game mark, we're really not seeing any improvement. If anything, it's getting worse. So I don't think we can just say that it's the guys getting adjusted to a new system at this point.
Well,
is this?
I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that Bob Hartley's system emphasized the individual talent of the player and utilizing their abilities to generate offense and, like, whatever their particular skill was. And that's how you saw guys, especially on the Flames' defense, get so many points, is that, oh, well, guys like Giordano and Brody, they can jump up into the play effectively and do what they can do to score goals and get assists. Whereas this system is a system where the players are having to readapt. Instead of just utilizing their strengths, they're having to have the additional responsibilities. And I think that in addition to adjusting to the system, that the team is also having to deal with the fact that they're not being given the freedom to utilize their own abilities to its fullest extent.
For sure.
Because, like, if you look at Stockton, for example, they're one of the best teams in the AHL and have been manhandling a lot of teams out there. It's the same system. And the young players in Stockton are getting it without a problem. So I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you are having veteran players that have bad habits and are having difficulty adapting because of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's fault on both sides. I think it's the job of a coach definitely to put a system in, but you can't come in doing what the Sutters did, you know, when they were here. If this is the system and you're going to conform to it, I think it is the job of the coach to do what Hartley did in a way and say, these are the talents I have, these are the players I have and what they do well, let's build a system around it. But at the same time, it's the player's job to adapt and do what the coach tells them to do. So I think there's a bit of give and take on either side.
Oh, I agree. And I think that miscommunication between all the parties is what is leading to the fact that none of the players on each line seem to have any cohesive idea on how to do anything.
I don't know. I mean, to me, it seems more, at this point, it doesn't seem like just a coaching problem. Like, the fact we're getting such a lack of offense from guys like Goudreau, I don't think this is just a I don't know what to do thing. I mean, guys who generally don't know what to do revert to old habits and familiar habits. And Goudreau's not even reverting to old habits at this point.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you have to also remember is that both Goudreau and Monahan didn't have a training camp, so they're a little messed up because of that.
Yeah, Goudreau went to the World Cup, though.
Yeah.
But even then, I mean, how many games do we give them before we say, okay, this isn't a lack of training camp anymore? I mean, most guys played, what, 3 games in camp?
Yeah.
So how many games? We're now 16 games in the season. How many games do we give until we say, this is not a lack of training camp anymore? My patience is running thin for those two.
Yeah.
You know,
same
we just
here.
Signed them both to a lot of money. We're expecting them to perform. And, you know, they have to perform for the contracts they just got. That's why we're paying them the big bucks. So, you know, I mean, going into this season, I was saying, before even seeing the roster, I think this team needs another year. I don't think this is a playoff team yet. I didn't think they were going to be this bad, but I just thought that there's some stuff that has to be resolved on this team with a new coach. And even before we knew there was a new coach, I just thought, you know, we need one more year for stuff to click. And when I saw the team in the preseason and we talked about the opening day rosters, and when I looked at this team on paper, it seemed pretty certain that, you know, this team was going to be a good team out there. It seemed pretty certain this team was going to be a playoff team.
Especially when considering our division.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't expect the Flames' six main players being Goodrow, Monahan, Bennett, Giordano, Brody, and Hamilton. I didn't expect all of them to struggle to the extent that they have. Like, I thought maybe one or two might have a slow start, but having all six of them be borderline terrible for their level of play, I don't think anybody could have evaluated that at this point.
No. And that's the thing, is I think at this point, for me anyways, it's more than just, you know, beginning of season struggle. There's too many guys all struggling at the same time for this to just be a, you know, we didn't have a camp, or, you know, we're trying to work on our new coach, and we're not seeing improvement. We're not seeing them trend up. If anything, they're trending down. So I don't know. I mean, something has to change here.
Yeah.
I guess the big question is, what has to change? I don't think you – a lot of people are calling for the coach's heads. I don't think you can fire the coach this quickly.
No.
It's going to send – nobody's going to want to coach here if we have, you know, two coaches fired in the same season.
Yeah. And I don't think that – yeah, like you said, I don't think that that is the best way of going about it. One thing that is a coaching issue, though, is the special teams. And I was doing some research, and prior to the New York Rangers game, if the Flames had an average power play and penalty kill, just 15th in the league, instead of being minus 17 in the goal differential, they actually would have only been negative 6. And they've surrendered 6 empty netters as well. So, more or less, if this team was not dead last in pretty much both categories, then wins that the Flames have, because I think that if the Flames got a goal here and there or didn't allow that big power play goal like the Dallas game in the third period, I think that in and of itself is one of the main reasons why the Flames are struggling.
We have 39 goals for and 59 goals against at this point. We have the most goals against of any team in the Western Conference. There's some teams that have fewer goals for, like Colorado, but we have the most goals against. And I think that's a big reason why is it's, you know, we're letting teams, A, get good shots and good scoring chances, and B, our special teams are not performing well. And if you can get the man advantage against the Flames, you're pretty much guaranteed a goal at this point.
And when you add in that the Flames are one of the most heavily penalized teams.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't help either.
Yeah, it's...
And that's the thing. It's like, if you're terrible on the PK, stay out of the box.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a pretty simple solution. Is if you can't kill a penalty, don't take a penalty.
I know. And, like, as soon as Chiasson took that high-sticking penalty in the third period against Dallas, I was at the game, and I even said, oh, well, there's the game right there. And sure enough, they scored shortly into it, and that was the game. And it was just a careless, dumb, high-sticking penalty. That's it. And a lack of discipline from players is what's contributing to it.
The other thing that I'm disappointed by is it seems like the coach's solution is just switch the players where they are in the lineup. Put a new guy on the first line, new guy on the second line. To me, if you're a coach and your team's struggling this badly, you have to start adapting the system. You have to come in and maybe say, hey, this idea I had, it's not working. What do we change? And to me, we're not seeing that kind of change happening. I don't see any difference in the way these guys are being asked to play or the way that we're seeing them playing from game to game.
And I think that's a lack of leadership on all parties, both the coaching staff and the players themselves, because the players should be having internal meetings to try and figure out a solution as well with the coaching staff, and we're just not seeing it.
I think it's partly accountability, too. I mean, one of the things that I still think made Bob Hartley, and I don't know if it was Hartley or Tree or a combination of both of them, I think it's probably both of them, I think one of the things that made him so effective in his first year is if you didn't play well, you sat. You know, how many guys did we see brought up from the farm that year? Guys like Juris, who we never thought would play at the NHL level, and played pretty well. And I'm not seeing that so far. I mean, we've kind of got our guys we rotate between. We've got, you know, the defensemen who slot in, and Yoki Packett sits out once in a while, and Hamilton's been sitting out. But to me, if you're not performing, it's time to sit and bring somebody up from the farm and see if they can get the job done that you can't. And I think that was one of the big things we both, I know I criticized Hartley for last year. I think you did too.
Yeah.
Was if these guys aren't performing, it's like the Mason Raymond thing. How much leash did we give him? Like, if you can't do the job, bring in somebody who can and keep bringing guys up till we find a guy who can do the job.
I agree. And I think that this year, especially if the Flames do continue to struggle, that you'll see guys like Klimchuk, Jankowski, even Mangiapane getting shots in the NHL just to see if any of them actually spark anything in the NHL.
Yeah, I can definitely see that happening. I think that has to happen, especially with Stockton being on fire and these guys being hot right now. It needs to start happening sooner rather than later. I don't know what you do, but somewhere somebody has to, and I hate using this term, but somebody has to be made an example of. Whether it's sitting a big player and saying, you know, you're not playing well, you're on the bench, or a coach gets fired, even though I don't think that's right, or the GM gets fired, which I don't think is right. I think somewhere somebody needs to publicly be made an example of, and I'm just not sure who or when.
Yeah, and like I think if the Flames struggles continue till the end of December, then I think you fire the coach.
I think it, well, okay, so if we fire the coach, who do you bring in at this point?
Honestly, I don't think it matters. I think you
give
just
Dave
bring
Cameron the job.
Honestly, I might even just bring Huska up for the balance of the season until you can find somebody else as a more permanent option in the offseason.
I think they'd be more likely to give either Cameron or Gerard the job.
Yeah. Well, it depends if you fire them too. So
I don't think you can fire three coaches all at once. Who's going to coach our team and the AHL team then?
Yeah.
Especially with the AHL team off such a hot start, you don't want to just, you know, switch all the coaches one night. So, I don't know. I don't think the team fires the coach at this point. I think you have to kind of leave, you got to leave Gullitson in for at least a year. I mean, at this point, if the season is a wash by the end of the month, what's the point in firing him? If we don't get more points, we're pretty much out of it by the end of the month. Why? What are we going to change by firing him at that point?
True.
You know, not a whole lot. You might as well see it through. Wait until July 1 and see who's interesting out there that didn't get re-signed. I've started to wonder. I wonder if they fired Hartley last year, sort of anticipating a certain coach, and I think we all know two or three of the names that were out there, coming into this team. They didn't get their man, and they hired Gullitson sort of as a plan B, because everything you hear about him, he wasn't out looking for a head coaching job. The Flames knocked on his door. Not vice versa.
That could very well be.
You know, I mean, who are some of the big names? We had Bruce Boudreau, I think, was the biggest one.
Carlisle was out there.
Carlisle. So I think those were kind of the big names that we had. We had Bedard from the AHL, who they talked to, who was supposed to be a good coach. Like, I think that it was just, yeah, there were these big names they wanted, and I think they all got snapped up when we were like, crap, we have no coach now. This guy, he used to be a head coach. He's good enough. And, you know, I'm hearing people now calling for Treliving's head. I don't think it's the GM's problem at this point. The GM, on paper, has put the right players on the ice. That's his job.
Well, you look at heading into this past offseason, what were the two biggest needs? A right winger with size and goaltending. What did he get?
And getting Johnny and Monty signed.
Yeah. And what did he get? Brouwer, who has done an effective job as the big right winger on the second line.
And I'd say he got him on an affordable deal.
Yeah. And then you got the two best available goaltenders. You know,
Johnny and Monty both on affordable deals.
Yeah. So he did his job.
Yeah, I don't think it's Treliving's fault at this point. He's put the team on paper that he needed to put together. I'm wondering if, and I have no inside knowledge of this, but I'm wondering if the team is struggling because these players don't believe in this coach. I wonder if they're, you know, thinking in their head, this guy's an assistant coach. He's never been an NHL coach.
Yeah, yes.
Or at least a head coach. Well, oh, yeah, that's true. He was in Dallas. But, yeah, I don't know. I just wonder if they don't have any faith in this guy.
It's really tough because it usually after, like, the first 10 or so games, teams start to figure things out and get on the same page.
Well, that's it. And even when there's a new coach, you start to kind of see their fortunes increasing. They might not be totally where they need to be, but you see them trending upwards.
And, like, we started to see that, like, when they went to Chicago and St. Louis and
we had a couple
even
of
the
games.
San Jose game, like, they and the Chicago game in Chicago at the start of the month, like, you could see that, like, things look like they were coming together. Then once they hit the LA Kings, it's like everything that they were building just fractured entirely, and, like, everybody's off of this on their own page now entirely.
But even look at last year, we had, what, 7 good games? Like, we had a streak of 7 games where this team looked promising, and the other 75, they looked not so good?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I think we're on that trajectory again this year. And I think in some ways we can afford it. We can afford this year to not make the playoffs. We've got everybody who we need under more than 1 year deal. We're not built like Chicago where we've got to blow this thing up at the end of the year. The bad contracts that we have are coming up at the end of the year. Between this year and next year, a lot of money comes off the books. It's going to let us buy the rest of the pieces we need. I'm not trying to give the team an excuse or a pass, but I just think that we can afford one more year, but we better get it done next year. Like, I'm not saying we should win the Stanley Cup, but this team better come out looking like an NHL team, because I think that this rebuild now, if you look at the roster, the rebuild is over.
Yeah.
You know, we might need a couple pieces here and there, but we've got the young players we need. We've got the guys in the system we need. The rebuild is over, so let's act like it.
Yeah, and realistically, if the team reallocates Weidman's money and gets an equivalently expensive forward that can play with Gaudreau and Monahan and is like a legitimate 25-goal threat, then that makes the team actually dangerous to play against. Whereas,
remember, we're also going to have to sign a starting goalie.
Yeah, but
as of now, it's Tom McCollum.
Yeah, well, I don't see that being much more than $4 million, really, because there are a number of goalies, whether it's Elliott or other.
I think it'll end up being Elliott again, just cost wise.
Yeah,
I think the other guy everyone's thinking, Ben Bishop, is going to be in a bidding war.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't see it being that big of a deal. But another thing, I know it's early, but at least in this year's draft, there are 4 right wingers in the top 10 that are over 6'2". So if the Flames do struggle, they will at least address the right winger position finally.
Yeah, but even then, who knows of that guy? I mean, the trend is bring the guy up right away.
Yeah.
But I always look at the draft as don't look at it as an immediate fix. Look at it as a fix 2 to 3 years out.
Oh, I know. But at least they would actually have a legitimate top end forward prospect that's a right winger, which is something that the Flames lack. So, and again, as you said, like, that player likely wouldn't show up in the NHL for 2 or 3 years in a reliably dangerous role for the team, but at least they'd have another one.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and I'm not saying I want to see it. I mean, it pains me to see a week like this week as a Flames fan, but I think we can afford to let this one, you know, to get better draft picks this year and maybe sell off some assets or move some of that. Even if we don't sell off the asset, just letting some of that money go and being able to finish what I'm now calling the retooling. I think we've done the rebuild, and now we're doing the retooling of filling the holes that we have, right? Like we did with the goaltending, like we did with bringing Brouwer in, and finish that retooling next year. But I think this fan base is starting to get a little impatient with this team, and we're expecting results. I mean, we've waited long enough. The team told us, wait for results, and we've waited. And I don't know how much longer you can wait.
Well, I think a lot of fans are just worried about, like, Calgary being Edmonton 2.0. And I don't think
we're quite there yet, Matt.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where some of the frustrations are coming from, because of the fact that, like, this team, they went out and addressed the goaltending in a legitimate way. Like, okay, yeah, we didn't get the results from them that we wanted last year, but now we've got two of the best goalies from the last number of years on our roster, so like we're taking that next step, and then they fall on their face even further and look worse significantly so than they did a year ago. And it's like expectations versus results, and I think there's a bigger gulf this year than even a year ago.
For sure. But I mean, if we look at the contracts, you know, like you're talking about the goalies, look at the contracts that come off the books this year. Versteeg, Weidman, England, Elliot, Johnson. I think that one of Elliot or Johnson have to be retained. I think it'll be Elliot at about $4 million. But the other guys, I mean, are we going to miss them?
Not really.
Are you going to miss Weidman at $5.25 million? Are you going to miss England at $3 million, who I think ends up being our free agent signing by Vegas? Are you going to miss Versteeg at $950,000? Maybe. Depends how he does when he comes back. But, I mean, freeing up almost $8 million there, plus, let's say, another $1.7 million for Johnson. Well, that'll probably get filled. But let's say, you know, $700,000 there, almost $9 to $10 million. We can do a lot of things with that money.
Yeah, and you got to figure that Shillington and Anderson,
one of the two will make it up.
And so, like, likely next year, looking at a defense core of Giordano Brody, Hamilton, Kulak, Joki Paakka, and one of the kids.
I don't know. The way Joki Paakka's luck's going so far, he may not last till next year's a Flame.
Yeah. Well, in that case, two kids.
Yeah, Kulak kind of looks like he's replacing them.
Yeah. So
I was kind of expecting a good team in spite of those guys. I was expecting a good team that was being weighed down by Dennis Weidman and, you know, some of these bigger contracts, Matt Stajan, as we've seen, but Stajan's been one of the better players out there, you know. So I think that it's, yeah, I don't know what's going on, but if this keeps lasting, you've got to look in the offseason at making a change. But I also think at this point, we can't change everything by changing the coach. I mean, we changed up the special teams coaches, and the special teams are still terrible. So I don't know if it's getting players to buy into something or making a more simplistic system, but I have to put the blame on both sides right now, and that the players aren't doing this. And I mean, these are professionals. It's not like Gullitson's making them play chess here where it's all that strategic. It's playing hockey, and I don't want to diminish the game, but there's only so many ways to play hockey. And so, you know, if these guys can't catch on, then to me, the coach has to change his system. So I think fault lies on both sides right now. But, I mean, looking at what we're going to do to spark this team, Matt, one of the biggest things that's often done, and we talked about potentially calling players up, but often GMs try to make a big trade, and that's how they try to spark their team. I guess, first, in your estimation, is that what the Flames should be doing? Do you think the Treliving should be looking to make a deal at this point just for the sake of making a deal?
Desperation is the number one enemy to everybody. And the Flames are desperate, and everybody knows it. So you're going to get screwed royally if you make a big trade. And it's
teams aren't going to give you fair market value, no. I think, what Matt's trying to say.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter which player you trade. You're going to get like 50% of what you should. And
the Flames have two things working against them. There's the desperation and, I think, the cap. Teams know that we're probably, if we're going to make a deal, want to shed money. You know, it's not like in the past we've had $10, $12 million available. We've kind of got two things working against, desperation and the cap.
Yeah, no, and this team, like any of the players that you would ideally want to trade in a shakeup deal, are not players that other teams are going to want. One, and players that you're not wanting to trade, like Dougie Hamilton, you're not going to get market value for them. So if you're going to make a deal, then you're just basically screwing yourself for the future.
Yeah, and I think we've seen it historically too. The further down the chart you are, the harder it is to make a deal. Because if your players are playing terribly, nobody wants to pay for them. Nobody, as Matt said, wants to give you that market value. When you're at the top of the league, it's easy to change your players. They all look fantastic. I have to have this guy. What a great value. But, you know, the further you are, the bigger an anchor these guys are. And it's interesting you mentioned Dougie Hamilton, Matt. there's been a lot of talk over the past week that the Flames have been getting calls from for Hamilton. Of course, you know, GMs make calls as part of their job, but you know, the Flames haven't said they made him available, but there's been some talk that there's calls there. Do you think that Hamilton should, I mean, if you look at the defensive core, he's probably the most likely one to be moved if they're going to make a big move. But do you think that Hamilton solves the problem there? To me, Hamilton's not the issue on defense.
No. And like anything, you listen to any trade offer. And like if somebody made a ridiculous offer for Johnny Gaudreau, you look at it. But it'd have to be ridiculous. And when you have a young, cost-controlled, 6'5" defenseman with a hell of a slap shot, that you're not really going to want to deal that player easily. And
you just finished signing Hamilton to a big deal. It was a very cost-effective $5.75 million deal.
Exactly. And unless you're getting a significant overpayment by the team, which is not going to happen right now, then you just don't make that trade. And I don't see anybody really that is a fit for him. And I don't see that happening. It could, but it would be a shock if it did. And it would likely be a bad trade if it were to go down.
Well, that's it. I think if you were to get rid of Hamilton, you're probably not going to get market value back. And I think at this point, if you're making that trade, you're not trying to salvage the season and bring back a roster player. You're probably trying to bring back either picks or prospects. And I think the kind of teams that are going to want to take Hamilton aren't going to be teams that are picking high this year anyways. You know, you're not making a trade for him with Colorado or Phoenix. It's going to be with a Detroit or a Montreal. And at this point, Hamilton's got 5 years in this deal. We don't have to trade him now. It's not like the clock is running out. I'd say hang on to him for at least this year. See how next year works, and if there's still value, then trade him then.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, if you're impatient, like, that's where you get into problems. And, like, yeah, guys like Gaudreau, Monahan, Bennett, Brody, and Hamilton are all struggling. But they're not veteran players yet. Brody kind of is, but, like,
I don't know, I think any guy you're putting on your first pairing,
I know, but you know what I mean. Like, they're not, like, in their prime yet. And this team is rebuilding. So you're just hurting yourself just to make a deal at this point. And you might as well see what they become and then figure out what to do. It's sort of like what Edmonton did with Taylor Hall. After X number of years, you knew what he was. A scoring winger that was inept defensively. They needed a defenseman. They went out and made that trade. And it was mutually beneficial. Edmonton's better this season because of Larson. And New Jersey's better.
Because of Larson, or if it's because of a lack of the guy they got rid of?
Probably both. And New Jersey's better because they desperately needed some offense, because they're such a stingy team with surrendering goals that was a good enough trade-off for them. But we don't know what each of these players are yet, so it's hard to tell, oh, this guy is this, like what Edmonton knew with Hall, so we can have that flexibility.
But I mean, even if we project Hamilton as our number three, which where he is now, I'm perfectly happy with his money and his talent as our number three. And I think it's going to be hard to fill that, whether through trade or internally.
Yeah, like even if he's basically a 23-year-old version of Dennis Wiedemann and will just be that guy, that's still a valuable piece of a team moving forward.
Yeah, as long as you're not paying him 5.25 when he's Weidman's age.
Yeah.
If he's the next Wiedemann.
But you know what I mean? Like, if he's just okay defensively and can put up 40 points every year and quarterback your power play, like, that still has value.
Well, that's it. Not every defenseman can be a huge offensive defenseman. I mean, the position is a defensive position, hence the name. But I mean, you know, let's say Hamilton goes. Let's say they trade Hamilton. So now, at the end of the year, Wiedemann and England go. So what have you got left? You got Giordano, Brody, Jokke Pekka, Kulak. I don't think that we can look at Anderson or Shillington as stepping in as a number three right away. I think they're sort of 4-5 or 5-6 guys.
Yeah, like they might eventually develop into top pairing defensemen.
But you got to give them a few years.
Exactly.
And so now we've got to go out in the offseason to find another number three defenseman. It's just, if we trade Hamilton at this point, it's one more hole to patch.
Yeah, and unless you're just creating
problems.
Unless
you trade him for a top line right winger, and then you're, you know, then you fix one hole and open another, that would be one thing, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and at that rate, why are you trading, like, the hardest piece to get, which is either a center or a defenseman, for something that's not vital, which is the winger? So, like, you're taking less value overall, so...
Yeah, I can't see anyone who you move on this team just to make a move.
No, like, if anything, I think they just ride out the season, and if Calgary continues to be outside the playoffs, you see what they did last year in extracting value for Hudler and Russell and guys like...
Listen, you'll get something for Weidman, you'll get something for England at the deadline.
Like, I could even see the Flames deciding and opting to just trade Elliott possibly at the deadline if, you know, if they're not gonna sign him.
I don't know.
Or
the
Johnson.
Only reason I can't see that this year is just because of the expansion draft. We need to have at least one of them signed.
Well, we do. McCollum.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I don't think that's the way that we go protecting and into the draft, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, it depends on their own evaluations for how the balance of the season, but like if things do continue to be bad, like I could see them, like anybody that's UFA that are not in their plans, just moving them outright.
Well, and even a guy like a Boma or a Stajan, you know, who have 1 year left, I can see those guys being potential targets as well.
Yeah, because everybody needs a good fourth line center. Like, you, I mean, and how many times do you see guys like that getting dealt on deadline day?
That's it. If we can extract value from Bomo with, you know, this year and next year on his contract, move him.
Yeah.
That's easy to replace in our organization.
Yeah, Garnett Hathaway can step in and do the exact same job.
And probably do it better and cheaper.
Yeah.
So I don't see them making that move. I don't see them making the Hamilton move, which is what's been talked about. There's rumors that Trelevin was seen in Montreal during the Habs and Wings game. People thought that's what he was talking about. I'm not saying I don't see a trade being made, but I don't see a trade being made either to shake up the team or just to make a big deal. Like, you know, there's always a trade made somewhere, and it'll be some fourth liner for a draft pick or, you know, something like that. There will be a trade made, but I don't see it being anything that turns this team around. We're not going to shock the players by moving Hamilton.
Yeah, and plus with the Flames playing Detroit next week, I think that... them going, Trelevin watching Detroit, I don't see
as
being
a scouting move.
That big of a deal.
Yeah, I had a couple days off. Why not go off to Montreal? So, Matt, here's a question that I've been thinking about recently. Looking at the rebuild, and if we think of this as the last year of our rebuild and trying to extract value from it, I think we both agree this team waited too long to trade Iggy. I think we probably both agree, or maybe not. Let me know if you don't. But I'm happy as a Flames fan that we let Kipper retire as a Flame. But as a, I guess, an analyst of this team, I really wish we would have got some value there. While I'm not blaming anything on him, do you think if there's a market for him this year, it's time to move Giordano while he's still hot, while we could still get something for him?
I agree with you that the Flames should have probably traded Iginla in the 2009 period, somewhere along there. For Giordano, no. I think that, like, I'm going to draw a comparison to Chicago because it's convenient. They had two young defensemen at the time, Seabrook and Keith. Just like the Flames have Brody and Hamilton. But the third guy that they had was Brian Campbell, and he at the same time was roughly the same age as what Giordano is now. And he helped those guys develop and transition by taking some of the pressure because of the fact that he was a veteran guy who was responsible. And Chicago didn't get anything for Campbell when they moved him to the Panthers. They got Rostislav Olish and they bought him out. But I think that for what this team needs is somebody that's just a rock for the team, so that way when you've got guys like Kulak, Anderson, and Shillington, especially in the next couple of years coming up, that they have somebody reliable there that can help develop everybody. And I just don't see... I think what you're going to get in trade is not worth what he'll actually bring in terms of being the leader and helping everybody else develop.
I agree with you. I just wanted to bring it up because it's been talked a lot about in Flames circles. I think that we look... I think we tend to do this with any star player. I think we overvalue them. And I think we think here in Calgary we're going to get a lot more for Giordano than you will on the open market. He's making $6.7 million every year until the end of 2021-2022 season. It's a big contract for somebody to absorb for an older player. And while I think we're getting a good deal for him this year, I agree with you. I think we're going to overpay him a little bit in the end, but he's going to be a solid number three. I don't think he's the number one guy for more than maybe two more years. I don't think that Hamilton's necessarily the number two, but I think we have enough defensemen in the system that could slot in there. I think it's going to be Brody and somebody. I'm just not sure who yet, but I think you have to keep Giordano around. I mean, maybe a movement in the last year, but Giordano's been around forever. I mean, he's the last guy of the old guard, if you will. He's the last guy of the Jerome McGinley regime for a reason. I think he's a solid defenseman. I don't see him going down. I think he's going to make Iggy. He can play till he's old if he wants to. And I think you keep him around as long as he's serviceable, even if we're overpaying him a little bit.
Yeah, and if the Flames get into a cap crunch, say, in the 2019 season or something like that, then you can do exactly what Chicago did and move him to another team. And even if it ends up being a cap dump and you're not getting full value, that's not a big deal because the cap itself will be the important thing.
Yeah, even then, looking at the contracts, there's other cap dumps I'd try to make.
Oh, of course. But you know what I mean. Like, if it came down to him and just trying to get rid of, like, $2 or $3 million freed up for, so you can sign somebody else, then that becomes the asset, not what you're necessarily getting back in trade.
I mean, Gio's 33. We have him signed until he's about 37 or 38, depends on when his birthday is. I think by like 2019, 2020, he's going to lose a lot of that trade value. Nobody's going to want to trade us a three-year contract at 6.7 for a 36-year-old player. I don't see Giordano playing out the rest of this deal. I think he retires before it's done, and I think that's more likely, Matt, at that point, is if we need to get rid of him, he just retires.
Yeah, I don't see that necessarily, but I think that like he'd have value to a team where the Panthers were when they acquired Campbell, a team that's in the middle of a rebuild, sort of like what Edmonton was 2 years ago, a team like that where they just need somebody that has that experience to build around. And I think that's where you would end up seeing that player go. But
to me, I think the Jerome McGinley trade was symbolic in a lot of ways. It was the, we're moving past our star. We have to move this player to start a rebuild, to get some young assets and start this. To me, there's no point in moving Giordano. I mean, yeah, we could probably get value for him, but I don't see where we need that value, where you say, you know what, mortgaging Giordano is going to help us fill X role in spades. Like, I don't think we're going to see that at all. And I think it's just a move to, again, to make a move. But I think the Jerome trade was really the start of the rebuild. And I think if we're as bad as Edmonton, which, you know, you alluded to earlier, some people think we might be getting into, then you might have to move them to say the rebuild didn't work. Let's mortgage this piece to bring in pieces for the second rebuild. But fingers and toes crossed, we don't get there. To me, it's a move just to make a move.
Yeah. And those are the ones that you usually end up losing. Sort of like when Daryl Sutter was in his final year as the GM with the Flames, and we saw Jokinen.
I'm trying to forget that season.
Yeah, Jokinen getting acquired or dealt to the Rangers, I mean, for Kotalik. And the Phaneuf trade. Like, that's where, like, desperation results in those types of trades. And I
think the Phaneuf trade is probably the best analog here. I think if we were to trade Giordano, we would get a package similar to Phaneuf trade.
Yeah, and, like, yeah, that's not exactly great. So
I mean, Stajan's still around, but we got, you know, Freddie Shustrom, who is supposed to be the key prospect there. I think we just get a bunch of junk if we were to trade Jerome Giordano at this point.
Yeah. You might get a mid-first or equivalent and a decent prospect, not a good one, but like a Shinkarik-level prospect, and that's about it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not like mortgaging Gio is going to help us. Like, if we could mortgage Gio and get some top-line right-wing hotshot prospect, maybe you look at it. But right now, I don't see why we need to mortgage that asset and what we're going to get back that we don't have. We're pretty deep.
Yeah.
In the system. So I've heard people, again, I wanted to bring this up because I've heard it online talked about a lot. I don't see the point besides, you know what, we got stung by Jerome and we don't want to get stung again. But I think there's something to be said for keeping a guy around. I mean, yes, they're business assets, but, you know, Joe's been very loyal to us. We've been very loyal to him. And I think unless he's terrible, unless he's, you know, the next Dennis Weidman-like player at that age, I think, you know, we're overpaying him a bit, but you just let the guy ride out into the sunset as a Flame.
Can't argue with you.
Any other kind of thinking about the State of the Union, any other things you think we need to do as a, and I guess not us, but as an organization, the Flames need to do to kickstart this season?
Honestly, I think what they'll need to do if the struggles continue is to remove the players that are not performing, and whether that's waving them to Stockton or just
put them on the bench for a couple days.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that we're starting to see that now. It came out today that Troy Brouwer has been moved on to the first line with Gaudreau and Monahan, so that's one change, because Alex Chiasson looked completely out of place on that line.
And the Flames have also brought Garnet Hathaway up. Do you think that Chiasson maybe sits out and Hathaway draws in the lineup?
That's what I'm hoping for, because I think Chiasson has played so poorly that I actually would not be shocked if he, like Grossman, was waived and assigned to the AHL.
So let's talk a little bit about some of these moves then. We talked about Chiasson being moved off the first line, the possibility that he maybe sits out because Hathaway has been recalled. I don't see anyone else who Hathaway really slots in for. They're really having Chiasson play that sort of grinder, agitator role this year, which Hathaway's baby and the way he plays. But they've also called a Wotherspoon, which I thought was an odd move, right after they got rid of Grossman. So let's start there. Grossman, finally, we saw, got waived. I was joking last week they should have left him in California and our Flames listened to us. Like, oh, that would have been a good idea. But they waived him right after they got home. And nobody claimed him. Are you shocked?
No, not at all.
Nobody claimed Grossman. So he refused to report to the AHL, so they waived him again. And now they've terminated his contract mutually. No surprise there that apparently some other team wants him. Some team in Sweden wants to sign him. I guess my question is, who is so terrible at defense in Sweden that they need him? But Grossman had a comment on this that he talked to a Swedish website. He said, I have agreed with the Calgary Flames about this solution. It would be like a step back to go to their farm team in the AHL and play there, given where I am in my career. And I don't know. I think I hate to say a guy is full of himself, but this is a guy who didn't get a contract until the day before the season started. This is a guy who's making league minimum. I don't think, you know, if you were that good, you would have had a contract.
Yeah, and you would still be playing every day.
Well, that's it. The fact that you got bought out and the fact that you weren't playing here and you were looking terrible this year, you know, I don't think it's a step down to say you're going to the AHL. You know, we've terminated them. No love loss there. There's another experiment. It's like our Anders Ericsson and Philip Kuba, or not Kuba. Who was it that Feaster brought in 1 year for a seventh-round pick, some old, terrible defenseman?
I can't even remember off the top of my head.
Maybe it was Kuba. I'd have to look. But, you know, we've done this a few times, and I honestly think Grossman, I don't think they ever had much intent of playing him. I think it was just there to get the long-term injury reserve cap space for Smead, because the way it works, from what I understand, is Smead's making, like, what, 2.5 this year, 3 this year, somewhere in there?
3.
So if he's making 3 and we have $2.5 million available under cap, that means we only get $500,000 of cap space we can spend over the limit. So the ideal is to get as close to the cap as possible with long-term injury. That way you have more money you can spend over that cap. So I think that Grossman was just brought in as a numbers game there. What I'm hoping doesn't end up happening is I hope that because he didn't report and he got suspended or whatever it is, that we don't end up having to pay this deal out. Because I really don't want to have any more Grossman contract on the books.
Yeah.
We're already paying for Mason Raymond to have gone away. I really don't want to have to pay Grossman to go away as well. I mean, it's going to be very minor. It's half that. So it's $250,000 next year, but it's still something, you know? So good. I guess, you know, goodbye Grossman. I'm not going to miss him, but I think what this does do is it cements Brett Kulak now as our number seven, if not higher, defenseman. Would you agree?
Yeah. And, in the Rangers game, he was a -4, but really, he wasn't the only problem on almost one of the goals.
Everybody played a terrible game there.
Yeah.
And the way that the Flames are going this year, I'm really surprised, honestly, Kulak's still here. But we've been seeing Joakim Pekka sitting out a lot. And I can see, just based on what the Flames seem to be liking here, is I can see Kulak potentially taking Joakim Pekka's job.
Yeah. Well, Joakim Pekka is a decent number 6-7 defenseman. And I think because of where the Flames were last year after the deadline, they used him in basically Chris Russell's spot. And I don't think that he's a good enough defenseman to play beyond a number 6 role. And
no, they're kind of looking at him to be the number 4, sort of right after Hamilton on the depth chart.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't really expect him to be more than the 6-7 for this season or beyond, really.
Yeah, I think that Joakim Pekka was slotted into lineup because he was acquired for Russell and we needed him right away. But I think it's really going to be kind of, you know what, earn your way up. Earn your way onto the lineup. And I mean, I think next year he'll get, you know, England spot or Weidman spot. I don't think there's any question there if he's still around. He's a UFA or an RFA. I mean, I think he'll be here. But I think this year it's kind of going to be him and Kulak battling. Sort of what you were saying earlier is the better man plays the game. And so far I think that's been Kulak.
Yeah, and next year it will depend on how guys like Shillington and Anderson perform in training camp and if they're ready for the NHL. I think that will determine whether or not Joakim Pekka is the number 6 or the number 7. Because I think if those two guys come in and show that like they are ready for an NHL spot, one or both, that could potentially push Joakim Pekka out of the lineup.
Yeah, I still think that Joakim Pekka may be a casualty of the expansion draft. Not so much anymore with the new UFA rule. I think Vegas might take a shot at England because he lives there. But before that, I thought that Joakim Pekka might. But I mean, he's a young defenseman. Whether he's a 6-7 guy, I'd be happy to keep him there in that role. Or if we can extract some value in a move. But I mean, he's cheap. He's $900,000. I see no reason not to keep him around as your 6-7. He's a better option than Grossman.
Yeah.
And he can, I mean, he can step in. Don't get me wrong. He can step in and play, I think, 4 or 5 minutes when he needs to. But we can't rely on him to do that for 70 games a year.
No, you know, like if
you've got an injury, yeah, he can step in and do that for a week.
Yeah, if you're relying on him to be the number 4, you're not going to win very many games.
No, and same thing with Kulak. I don't think Kulak's there yet either.
No, and that's why I think a lot of these young players, they need time in the NHL to see what they have and play for like 30, 40 games. So that way they can make those mistakes like Kulak did in the Rangers game and learn from it instead of, oh, you played 5 minutes and you're going back never to be heard from again.
Enter Tyler Wotherspoon, who also got called up this week. I thought kind of a surprising move because, you know, we have all the defensemen we need. We just got rid of a defenseman, and I'm not sure where Wotherspoon fits in or where he gets play time. We've already seen Wotherspoon be brought up in the past and not play here. So I don't know about you. I'm just, unless we're going to sit somebody like Weidman or England, I don't see where he fits in, and I think that if we're going to bring Wotherspoon up, we've got to play him because we've got to figure out if this guy is an NHL player or not.
Yeah, and I think that with him being here, it's more to build value up for him. Because I don't think that if, as things stand right now, I would not tender him a contract. I think he's an RFA at the end of the year. I wouldn't even offer him a contract and just let him go to UFA. So if he needs to show that he is valuable and worth a contract.
The only thing I can think of, if you look at it, we have seven defensemen now: Giordano, Hamilton, Weidman, Brody, England, Joki Paka, Kulak. Maybe they're trying. Maybe they're going to sit Weidman for a bit, and you know that gives us six without him. But then that brings Kulak in the lineup. But you've got to sit somebody else then to get Wotherspoon in. And I just don't know at this point who you sit. I don't think Giordano or Brody are playing terrible enough. You sit them. England, I think, has been the best defenseman out there. So maybe you sit Joki Paka and you bring Wotherspoon in. But that's going to be, I think, really deflating to Joki Paka too.
Yeah. Now, here's a question I have for you.
Sure.
The Flames lack right wingers in the organization. Dennis Weidman is a right-handed shooting defenseman, and he's big. He's slow, but passable. What do you think about him possibly moving him up to a right wing spot just because the Flames have nobody else?
You float this notion every year, convert a defenseman to some forward position. It hardly ever works, let's be honest.
True.
I mean, when was the last time you saw a guy, maybe Bufflin, who can do both very well? Yeah, so, that's two guys in the entire league. But I don't see where we get value from that. So we move him up. It gets him play time. Maybe if he was a young guy. But, you know, my question then is, whose spot does he take? Chiasson's? Like, we can bring up a right winger. We can bring up Poirier or somebody if we want a right winger. I don't think we're that desperate that with 1 year left on his deal, we need to give old man Weidman a spot just to keep him on the roster.
Just throwing that out there because of the Flames' lack of offense that maybe
I know where you're going, but I don't think that the cure to the lack of offense is to put old and slow Dennis Weidman on the forward ranks. Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, Weidman is struggling as a defenseman. I don't think that he's going to do that well. And I'm just looking at lineups. Like, where do you put him in the lineup then? Who do you put him with that's not going to expose him for being slow?
Just throwing it out there, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. He'd almost have to go with, like, Ferland and Hamilton or something. I don't know. Not what I would do, but maybe that's also why I'm not an NHL coach. I think that you would just kind of, you know, ride Weidman as your number seven or number eight if Joki Paka becomes number seven. And I think Weidman's days here are doomed, and I think he probably knows as well. So it's just kind of, you know, keep him warm. At this point, I'd waive Weidman. I honestly would. I would waive him and try to send him.
Well,
you're paying him.
He has a no movement clause, so he can't send him.
Is it no move or no trade?
I think it's a no move.
Okay, I thought it was a no trade. We'd have to look into that. But because if it's no trade, I'd waive him. You're paying him anyways. If it's no move, we're kind of screwed. So I don't know. I don't know what to do with him. I don't think making him a forward's the answer, but we'll see. So looking back at this team, anything else? I mean, state of the union right now, how long, Matt, do you wait until we kind of call this season a wash? We've got 5 games the next 7 days. After that, we have another 5 games this month.
I think that if the Flames do not get 6 or 7 wins out of the remaining 10 games this month, which that's going to be a very big uphill climb.
We have 10 games in 15 days.
Yeah. So unless they get 6 wins out of that at a minimum, then the season's done. And they've just put themselves too far behind the eight ball. Like, realistically, a team can only have, like, 31 or 32 regulation losses and make the playoffs. And the Flames already have 10, and we're 16 games into the year. There's really no time to screw around. The Flames need to get wins and get plenty of them. And I think that unless they basically go on, like, a 4 or 5 game winning streak starting today, then that's it.
I think a 4 or 5 game winning streak can keep your head above water. I mean, we saw that, you know, earlier when they went on a bit of a win streak.
Yeah, that's us hitting the reset button.
But even then, I mean, we've already hit that reset button and we fell down again. I think you've got to go on a win streak, and this team has to almost snap out of whatever they've got overnight for this to do us any good. Because we've had the win streak. I mean, we're 4 losses in a row now, but we've, you know, we had the wins coming. And then, like you said, we kind of hit the wall with LA and everything fell off again.
And realistically, this team is trending to be one of the bottom 5 teams in the league again, just like they were a year ago. And if that's the case, it is what it is, and you just look ahead to the draft and acquire whomever. Like, Tkachuk has been good, and...
Look ahead to the draft, and I think try to get as many minutes as you can for young players.
Yeah.
Whether that's through recall, whether that's, you know, through trading, whether that's just through sitting veterans. I think you just get into that post-trade deadline mode earlier.
Yeah, and just figure things out and go from there.
And I think the biggest thing, even if they don't make a change of coaches, figure out what has happened. Is it the lack of our stars having a preseason? Is it big contracts? Like, I think you've got the rest of the season reflect on this and make sure it doesn't happen again. Whether that means changing personnel in the offseason, whether that means working with the coach to try new systems throughout the year. I mean, if you lose this month, you're out. You might as well try something different. It can't hurt.
Yeah. Exactly. If they're,
you know, maybe you sit down with Gullitson and say, your way's not working. Try it this way.
Yeah. Figure something else out.
So I don't know. I think you're right, though. By the end of this month, we have to play 500 hockey through the rest of the month to even have a shot at getting anywhere. Otherwise, by Christmas time, I think that we can pretty much write this season off. December's a tough month for this team. Lots of games.
And I think that you and I are both being overly optimistic by not saying that it is already done, which it's pretty much already done.
I don't know. I would agree if it was last year, but I think we have a weak Pacific division.
True.
I also don't know if there's actually benefit to the team sneaking into the playoffs at this point. Like, let's say we make it just because the Pacific division is weak. We're going to get annihilated by whoever we play.
Oh, like for sure.
If this is the Calgary Flames that we're seeing, even if we go on the occasional hot streak and we barely sneak in, do we really want to go to the first round to get annihilated?
Well, some playoff games are better than no playoff games, but yeah, they're going to get destroyed, especially if they play Anaheim.
I guess I'm just looking that if that happens and we play Anaheim or LA, we've struggled with, I'd almost rather just, you know, and I'm not saying tank, but I'd rather take the top 5 pick and lick my wounds and come back next year. Then go to the playoffs, get annihilated, and lose that last piece of the rebuild.
I know what you mean. It's frustrating because you wish that the team would have come together and would be playing coherent, cohesive hockey, but that does not seem to be the case. And
for some reason, I think this team is going to come together, but it'll be like late January, and it's like, all right, too little too late, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Just like last year where we played really well after the trade deadline, and yeah.
Yeah, early February, somewhere in there, you know, this team will come together. We have our week break in there too. So maybe after that week break in late January, they come back together. And I don't know, I see it coming together. Like, it's too good to fail all season. This roster is too good to fail all season. I just think that it's going to be too little too late by the time the entire group comes together, and we're not going to get anything done.
Yeah. And you look at what Tkachuk has brought to the team just in the small sample size of games that he's played, and like the thought of adding another guy of that caliber, which there probably will be if the Flames are in the top 5, then like that will help down the road if the Flames do flounder and continue to suck. It's just not what the ideal situation is for anybody.
No. And, you know, it's going to be a long season if we're out by end of November.
Yeah.
Like, we've got a lot of games still left to play. We have a lot of podcasts to record. This is going to be, last year was painful. And I think this year is going to be more painful because we all had such high hope. if this team flounders for the rest of the month. And I think that you're starting to lose a lot of fans. You know, I'm seeing more people who say they're becoming a Fairweather Flames fan, and it makes me sad to see, but this team needs to produce.
Well, it's understandable. Like, if you watch any of the games recently, like that Rangers game, like that, in years past, like in the preseason, the first game usually is very boring just because, like, everybody's not really up to speed. Yeah. So, and that performance looked like the first game of the preseason where nobody knew what they were doing and they're just, oh, we're going for a skate today. And, like, if the Flames continue to play like that without any passion or ability to do anything, then fans are going to tune out because it's a boring product.
Yeah, and I mean, you're already seeing at the Dome this year, I think, more empty seats than we've seen in the past.
And it's extremely quiet in there. Like, I think that this season it's been
it's like
the
Young Guns era.
Yeah, like, there's very little cheering whatsoever in any game, and yeah, it's been not exciting.
Back in the Young Guns era, NHL players around the league used to refer to the Sal Dome as the library.
Yeah, and that's returning, unfortunately.
So, you know, and I think, but again, the team's getting what they deserve from what they put on the ice, but I just don't know what we do to turn this around. So we'll see what happens. I mean, last week I said that they should have left Grossman in California, and they waived him a few days after. So maybe somebody at the Flames is listening to us, Matt, and they'll be like, oh, those guys are right. You know, we should probably start changing our system up a bit. And maybe we'll see some good coming out of this. But let's talk a little bit about the other team, the team that's doing fairly well down in the AHL for the Flames, the shining light, if you will. I actually have a few people who tweeted us saying, thanks for the recommendation for watching the Heat. They're really enjoying the Heat games. So that's awesome to hear, because I don't know about you, I'm not enjoying watching Flames games.
No, at least Stockton, the games are interesting. They're playing very cohesive games. And they're scoring a lot of goals.
And even when they're losing, they're not just, like, fumbling all over the ice like the Flames are.
No.
It's competitive losses for the most part. So down there, interesting news, David Rittich, the goaltender the Flames brought over, got his first AHL shutout, and I believe his first North American shutout, too, when he played for the Heat this week. Did you watch that full game, Matt?
Yeah.
What do you think of Rittich?
He's an AHL goaltender, and he just was having a good game. Like, I don't see him being anything more than the AHL backup, but he had a good game. And
I watched the first two periods of that. I don't even know. I mean, I thought he looked solid for AHL. I don't even know if it was a good game. I thought that San Antonio wasn't playing a great game.
No, they were kind of terrible. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if we can give all the credit to Rittich. I think that, you know, he was put in at the right time against the right team, and everything just kind of fell in line. And he had a good team in front of him is really what I think it comes down to.
For sure.
But, you know, good for him. The other guy that's down there now has a 7-game point streak in the AHL is Mark Jankowski. He has seven game point streak this year. And if you look back through his time last year when they called him up after the deadline, he now has 18 points in 18 AHL games. So for a guy that we weren't really sure what we were getting when we drafted him, and I'm not saying the AHL is completely an indicator, but he's adjusted well to pro hockey.
Yeah, and the thing to note with Jankowski is actually a better defensive player than he is an offensive player, and he's performing at a point per game in the AHL. So if it wasn't for Matt Stajan having the best year in a long time, I think Jankowski would be in the NHL right now. But Stajan's blocking him just because he's performing, so.
But, I mean, even if we project going forward, if we're looking at Jankowski being sort of that defensive role, he's probably going to be more of a Michael Backlund-style player, and there's always room for that in your roster.
Definitely. And, like, if he can be, say, a 40-point shutdown third-line center, that's amazing. So
I'd say even if he can do 30 points.
Yeah, so that would be perfectly fine. If he does more, then it's just a bonus.
So I think that, you know, we weren't really sure what to expect from this guy. Some of us were expecting quite an offensive threat, and I think we're starting to see, you're right, that he is looking like he's going to be more of the
The player defensive... that he reminds me of a lot is Damon Lanko. Just a smart player who knows where he has to be at all times. And, like, none of his skills, like, you won't see him pulling any Johnny moves at all.
No.
But he's always in the right spot, and he can make those good passes, and he can take good shots. So he's just a very cerebral player. And somebody...
And, I mean, Lanko is always the kind of guy you want on your roster. No matter what team you were, you wanted to have a guy like that around.
Yeah, like, you look at what Lanko did, and... You're not seeing, like, when you see his stat sheet, like, it's not obvious that, oh, this guy is obviously a 30-goal scorer, and, like, you can expect that from him, but it was just how he approached the game that allowed him to do that, and I think that Jankowski similarly could have that level of success in the NHL if he completely translates his game into the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, Lanko had a 77-point season with the Flames in 06-07, 65 points the year after. I think that's a stretch for
Jankowski,
especially in the current game.
That would be like his upper limit if everything went well.
But yeah, I agree with you. I think that Lanko is definitely a good comparable there. Earlier in the season when I was watching him, I was kind of seeing some Christian Eselius in him. He sort of had sort of a European-style passing game to him, I guess. But yeah, I think Lanko is probably a good comparison. He's good. He's a well-rounded player, and he's got good hockey smarts. I think that's what's going to keep Jankowski in the league.
I think he's
for
a better playmaker than Lanko was. But what you said, he's shifty as well. So
yeah, I don't think he projects to be a top six forward, but I think he's one of those like a Backlund, sort of your second, third line, probably a lot of special teams play. I think he's a guy that could, if he keeps developing this way, be a Flame for a long time, but we have to tape our expectations a bit.
Yeah. Well, you have to pretty much do that with everybody. Like, you heard, like, people with Sam Bennett saying, he's going to be the next superstar player. Well, not necessarily. So.
No, but I think that Sam Bennett can still be a top five, top six forward and get... 40, 50 points. I think that Bennett projects to be either a playmaker or a sniper.
Yeah.
Like, he's projected to be an offensive threat. I don't think that you necessarily look at Janko as this is going to be the guy who puts a ton of points on the board for us and sends us to the playoffs. I think he becomes a cog in the wheel.
Yeah. And, I think what you would expect from him is the same type of role that Jordan Staal played with the Penguins, where you have your number one center being Monahan, your number two center being Bennett, and he's the defensive-minded third option, who you can throw out on the power play if you need, but he's going to be primarily your penalty killer, and you need an important face-off, he's going to win it, and he'll chip in some offense.
Well, and with both Stajan and Bomwa being off the books end of next year, I think that really opens a center spot in the bottom six for Jankow. Or at least, does Jankow play wing at all?
He can play either side.
Okay, so, I mean, that makes him pretty utilitarian.
He would be a more natural left winger because he does shoot left, but you could...
Just what we need, another left winger.
Yeah. Well, you can throw him anywhere. I think if the Flames needed to, they could shove him on the right wing and he'd be perfect.
We have our new first line right winger. Move over Chiasson.
Wouldn't be the worst idea. He's a smart enough player where he could figure it out. Where
give him a shot, at least.
Yeah, that's the thing. I always will take a smart player over anything just because of the fact that they're more adaptable and they can figure out how to do things in situations. Like a guy like Michael Frolik, he's a very smart player. So you can throw him on left wing, you can throw him on right wing. I think you can even throw him at center and he'd be fine. So, they're more adaptable. And I think...
Which especially in what seems to be an uber-complicated system nobody can figure out. The smarter player you are, the more likely you are to adapt.
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't we take a look further down in the Flames organization? And let's look at some of the prospects who we have playing outside of the pro ranks and what they're doing there. Just a little bit of a prospect update for Flames fans. Some names that we know from some of our preseason shows, guys that are looking good. We have Dylan Dubé playing for the Kelowna Rockets of the WHL. This week he has he's got 3 points in one game this week, quite a number of assists there. Matthew Phillips, He's looking really good for Victoria. I've seen some Victoria hockey. He's got 21 points in 19 games, 12 goals, 9 assists. He's fun to watch. Nick Schneider looks kind of the way he always has. Not a huge amount that's changed there. Tyler Parsons, though, I mean, he's on a good London Knights team. I'm focusing more on Parsons now. Now that we've drafted him, I saw him a few times last year. But I'm liking the way that Parsons is coming together. I think that he's looking, and maybe it's just because I'm noticing him more, but I think Parsons has a more complete game than Schneider does. And I think that, I mean, it's a big depth chart right now with McDonald and Gillies and Rittich and whoever else we've got, McCollum. But I think Parsons is going to be I don't want to say the goalie of the future, but I think he'll be around this organization for a while.
Well, that's the thing with when you're in that transitional phase like the Flames are, where they don't have their number one guy like they did with Kipper. You just have to keep adding goalie prospects one after another each year or two.
Well, you always say take one a year.
Yeah, and eventually one of them's got to figure it out. Just the law of averages. So Parsons playing well, that doesn't surprise me. Hopefully, as he progresses, he can push for a spot. I think Gillies is obviously the most likely to take the spot, but you can never have too many goalies. Just look at Anaheim with Anderson and Gibson.
Well, and that's, I think, how they found greatness, is just going through so many, you know, drafting goalies, taking a chance on them, and just having them in the organization. You can't win if you don't have the guys around. Looking at the NCAA college hockey, Adam Fox is playing defense for Harvard. He has 6 assists in 6 games, so he's got 6 points there. Brandon Hickey's playing defense for Boston University. Brandon has really filled out this year. He's looking more like an adult player. He's sitting at 4 points in 9 games. I caught some Boston University hockey. I was at a bar that had it on this week. Really weird game to have on, but it was fun to watch. And then our ECHL players, we have Mason McDonald, who's still tending net in Adirondack. He's 4-1-1 right now with a .884 save percentage. Brett Pollock, who came over in the Yoki Paka deal, has 4 points in 9 games. And Steven Falkowski is 3 points in 12 games. I don't expect Falkowski to translate into much. I think he's probably a career minor leaguer. What about you?
Falkowski does have some quality offensive instincts. So being a 6'7" defenseman, if he can figure everything out, which admittedly is a long shot, then he'll be a quality NHL player.
I just think there's too much there for him to figure out and too high of a defensive depth chart for him to climb.
It's one of those things. You just never know. And for a 7th-round pick, you throw a flyer at the guy. If he actually turns out, awesome. If not, hey, you tried. And I agree with you. I think it's a long shot, but it's better than some of the other options that were available, and hopefully he figures it out.
And looking at some of our prospects in Europe, Pavel Karnikov, who we weren't sure what was going to happen with him. He's playing in the VHL, which is, I believe, the minor league for the KHL. He has 12 points in 13 games, so maybe that was a good move from Karnikov to go over there. He's almost point per game. Linus Lindstrom is 2 points in 16 games playing in the SHL. I believe that's Sweden.
Yeah, that's their professional league. So even though it's only 2 points, that's actually fairly good for...
Yeah, it's a very competitive league over there.
Yeah. Matthias Janmark for Dallas. His first season, like at that age level, he had 0 points in 38 games, and yet he's a quality player in the NHL, so...
I honestly think the Swedish league's on its way up and the KHL's on its way down in terms of, you know, league rankings, if you will.
Yeah, so don't look at the stat sheet with the SHL and think that, oh, that guy sucks.
And that's a good point, because Olas Mattsson's over there, Adam Olas Mattsson, who has 0 points in 15 games. But again, I've got to see some stuff of his online. He's looking good over there as well. And I guess the wild card prospect for me for the last few years has been Rushen Rafikov, who they can't seem to get over to North America. 7 points in 29 games in the KHL. I didn't even know that we still had Rafikov's rights. I'm surprised they haven't given up on him yet.
Oh, no, you have him until I think he's 25, so another
maybe
couple of years.
Maybe eventually he'll get a visa.
Yeah, maybe another couple of years. If he gets tired of playing, getting bounced around, maybe he might want to come over.
Yeah, I don't know if it's him who wants to come over, if it's immigration, or what's the problem there. Well, Matt, I think that about wraps up looking at the Flames. Anything else you want to chat about before we look back and look ahead to the next week?
Well, I'm just hoping that this team can get on the same page. Like, even if they struggle for the balance of the season, like, at least try and get...
Try something different. Just shake things up. You know, like I said, try a different system or try moving players around, but do something different because what's happening now isn't working.
More experimentation, basically. And if certain players aren't working, switch it up and figure something out. And
I think that was our biggest criticism last year, you and I, of Bob Hartley, was that he wasn't bringing in those players when guys need to be replaced. And I hope that we don't make the same mistake again this year. Like, if a guy is playing terribly, sit him out. Motivate him. Remember a couple of years ago when we sat Weidman for 3 games and he came out looking like a beast after that?
Yeah.
And they even sat Johnny for a couple of games? But, yeah, I'm not saying that's going to fix things, but I agree with you. Just try something different, you know? Put Brower on the first line. Bring up Janko and put him on the first line. Just try something different because what we're doing doesn't work.
Yeah. What's the harm? Oh, we're going to lose?
We're already losing. Yeah. 4 losses in a row.
Exactly.
You're right.
Oh, it's gee, like we lost again. Gee, big deal.
We're second last in the league. The worst thing that can happen is we become last in the West.
Exactly. And, you know, if you find that chemistry, like, who knows? Like, as you said, like, if you tried Jankowski on the first line, maybe he clicks and that line tears off. Who knows? Like, if you're not trying new things, then... Yeah, you know,
even if you don't keep him here all year, even if you were to just bring him in, you know, for a week or two, get the guys working again, and then send them back down. Sometimes you just need to do that to ignite them, to put them with somebody different. I mean, look at Michael Ferland. We never expected him to be in the NHL, but he made a name for himself because we gave him a shot. You know, same thing with Hathaway. We never expected him to really be an NHL player, but we gave him a shot. So I think that, yeah, it's time to start giving some shots and maybe earlier in the year than we usually do. Well, Matt, let's if it's good with you, why don't we do our predictions? Looking back at last week, we had 4 points on the table. You and I were polar opposites. You thought that we would win both games, and I thought we'd lose both games. And for once, pessimism paid off, I guess, because I got the point.
Yeah, goody for you.
Unfortunately. Unfortunately, it's not like I wanted them to lose all the games, but they did, and that's the way it worked out. This week is going to be tougher. We have 5 games in 7 days, 10 games in the next 15, so we're pretty much playing every other day for the rest of the month. In the next week, we have 2 sets of back-to-backs. On the 15th, we're away at Minnesota, and the next night we come back here to the South Zone to play against Arizona. On the 18th, on Friday night, we host the Chicago Blackhawks. Then we go on the road for a 2-day back-to-back in Detroit and Buffalo. So 5 games in the next 7 days, 2 home games. If you do want to go to those games, make sure you go to our friends at TickTix, who you can download through the Android or iOS App Store, get some tickets. Probably pretty cheap these days, but you'd have to go in and check. Matt, 5 games on the table. What's your prediction?
Well, I'm going to say 2 points and only winning against Buffalo.
2 points against Buffalo. That's it. So the last game of the week we win.
Yeah. 4 more losses in a row and then a win.
So we're going to go 8 losses in a row, then get a win. Maybe.
Well, you got 3 really dynamite teams with Minnesota, Chicago, and Detroit. And we always seem to have a hard time with Tippett and Arizona, so...
Well, that's it. Like, Arizona's the only team in the West worse than us, but for some reason we seem to struggle with them.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 1 more than you. I think we're going to win to Buffalo, and I think we will go 1 point against Phoenix.
Okay.
I think that this team has to get something together, and I think Minnesota... I know we can't do this, but to me it really depends how we do in Minnesota. If we can keep it close, I think we go into Arizona with some momentum. If Minnesota blows us out, I think that we go into the Arizona game here with no momentum and we lose.
Yeah, that's where I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I kind of look at 1 point there. I think Minnesota is going to be a physical game. I think that's a game where the Flames have to keep their cool, because if they find themselves in the box too much, Minnesota's going to run up that score.
And what's with Eric Staal with Minnesota this year? He's leading the team with 13 points already. It's like, what?
Some guys have good years, some guys have bad years, right? Johnny's having a bad year, and he's having a good year.
I just don't think that anybody, including the general manager of Minnesota, expected that.
No, I mean, it's looking like a good deal for them right now. The most interesting game this week to me, the one to watch, Chicago, because we've traded games so far. We beat them, they beat us. This is sort of the, if this was like wrestling, this would be a rubber match. Each one of you guys has a win, and you're going for the best, you know, two out of three. And so I think the Chicago game is going to be the most interesting one this week to see what the Flames can do. We know, because we've seen it, we know we can play competitively against Chicago.
Yeah, well, they beat them the first time, and they played well for the first 47 minutes the second time.
Yeah, even though we lost 5-1, we still played pretty well.
Yeah, it was just
I hope they don't put Crawford in again.
Yeah. Oh, you know they are. Give me a break.
I want to see Darlene. Come on, change it up for us.
Yeah. No, I think after we gave them a hard time each time, I think they're going to run with who was good, so...
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect the Buffalo game. If you thought that the New York game was terrible, I can see Buffalo being another stinker.
Oh, the Buffalo games the last number of years have been disastrously
boring.
Last
year's was a terrible game.
Oh, even years before, it's like, oh, God. Like, each team deserves
to
lose.
Them.
Yeah, each team deserves a loss when we play them. Like, just absolutely horrible hockey to watch. So
stay tuned. I think Detroit's going to have their way with us.
Yeah. Detroit, they lose Pavel Datsyuk, they get better. Sure, why not? You know,
well,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. Something about the Datsyuk situation still doesn't add up to me. I think there's more there that we don't know. Just kind of, I'm leaving to go home to Russia? I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Well, he's been wanting to go back home for a number of years now, so...
Yeah, but he's got the contract. I don't know. Something just, it doesn't add up to me.
Yeah.
Like, you got a contract. You got to play through it. There's a lot of guys that in the past you probably wish from other teams would just go back to Russia. Like, I don't know. Something's just not. Oh, we wish Kotelik would have just picked up and gone back to Russia. Like, you know, there's just, something just doesn't sit right with me. But I don't think we'll ever know. But, yeah, they're looking good, too. I think Detroit's going to have their way with us. And the Detroit and Buffalo games, remember, are early games. Actually, three of the games this week are. The 15th is a 6 p.m. game. Detroit's a 5:30 start, which is a weird start time. And Buffalo's a 5 p.m. start. So, earlier games this week, so we don't have to stay up late to watch the Flames lose. We can watch the Flames lose and still get to bed at a reasonable time as we're crying ourselves to sleep this week.
Yeah. Yay, optimism.
Isn't it bad? Like, we're supposed to be up, but I look at this schedule, and to me, there's no way, if they can get out of this week 500, it's a success.
Yeah, and that's being optimistic.
If you can beat Arizona, it's success, yeah. And that's terrible to say. If you can beat the worst team in the West, it's a good week.
Yeah, I know. And then it gets even more fun the following week with four more games, three of which are against good teams, so...
Columbus, Boston, Philly, the Islanders.
Yeah, so...
And then Toronto.
It'll be...
Yeah, I don't know, Matt.
Yeah, it's going to be fun times moving forward.
And then if you look ahead to December, it gets even worse.
Yeah, Minnesota, Anaheim, Dallas right off the bat. Yay.
Arizona, Winnipeg, Tampa, Columbus, Arizona, San Jose, Vancouver, Colorado, Anaheim, and Arizona. At least none of the Anaheim games are in the pond. So we have a chance.
Yeah.
A slim chance, but a chance.
I doubt it.
If they're playing this way, no. I mean, at one point, you just put out the white flag and say, you know what, it's not even worth playing this game. Like, you know, next time we go to the pond, they should look into the forfeit rules in the NHL rulebook.
Yeah, just have a day at the beach.
Hang out in Disneyland. Just go to Anaheim, hang out at Disneyland, do some team bonding. I don't know, either send like your AHL squad to play the game, just call everybody up, or look into the forfeit rules, because I don't know, it's not looking good for this team as it is, much less waiting for the next Anaheim game in Anaheim. So I think the one to watch this week is Chicago, and the big slaughter this week has the potential to be Detroit. But let's hope that we're singing a different tune come the 21st when we record next.
Yeah, well, when the team plays as they have, it's hard to remain positive. Like, there's
well, they're giving us
broken.
Not much to be positive about.
And when your team is broken, it's hard to, oh, we're going to go win in 4 out of the next 5 games. You know, it's just, no.
We're being realistic here.
Yeah.
We're not trying to be negative. We're trying to be realistic. So.
Yeah. Like, I'm a very positive person by nature. So, you know, like, that's why most of my predictions tend to be on the more optimistic side. But, yeah, it's hard when, like, it seems like none of the players can even string passes together with any efficacy, so we'll see. But yeah, that's all we can do.
Well, Matt, try to enjoy the week. Try to enjoy Flames hockey if you can. And we will talk to you next week after the Buffalo game and hope we have a different result than what we're predicting.
Yeah, hopefully we're more upbeat and like, oh, we're back in things 5 days or 7 days from now, but it's going to be a tough uphill climb. So,
for sure. All right. Well, you have a good week, my friend, and we will talk to you after Buffalo.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week.
This has been another Fireside Chat. Don't forget to subscribe to the show at firesidechat.ca. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/firesidechat and to follow us on Twitter at Fireside Podcast. Catch our show on the podcast channel at thehockeywriters.com. Fireside Chat is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike license. Hosted by Dan Stevenson and Matt Dubor. Produced and edited by Peter Marino and Ryan Coetz.